The awful and tragic terrorist killing incident in Udaipur is still echoing all over the country. In fact, today the Supreme Court spoke very firmly and strongly on this, on one aspect of this, that is on Nupur Sharma's case. But we aren't going there. We are talking about what yesterday we had to postpone because of the developments in Maharashtra. Now, who are these two people? That is Ghaus Mohammad and Riaz Atri or Atari. I don't know how to perfectly pronounce his name. Now, these two are young people. Now, information has come out, stories have come out with some bit of credibility that they are, while they might be acting like lone wolves, indoctrinated, as they say, on the internet, which happens to a lot of ISIS-type people. They are self-indoctrinated, and that's why they are called lone wolves. So they are not exactly linked directly or run by, controlled by the organization, but they do something in the name of that organization's philosophy. So what was it in this case? Now, the intelligence sources so far, who've been quoted by the media, including our national security editor, that's Praveen Swami, and I've got some of the inputs from him, that organization is Dawat-e-Islami. Dawat-e-Islami means basically something like invitation to Islam. Now, Dawat-e-Islami is a Pakistan-based organization. Dawat-e-Islami came into being sort of in Ziaul Haq's times. Now, they are a Sunni organization. Ziaul Haq was also a supporter of conservative Sunni Islam. So how come another group of Sunni Muslims thought of setting up a group? That's because the group that Ziaul Haq was closer to was the Deobandi group. So the other stream of Sunni Islam, or fundamentalist Sunni Islam, or conservative Sunni Islam, that is the Brelvi group, they thought that they were being left out and Zia was patronizing the Deobandis. So Zia's Islamists were essentially Deobandis. And that's the kind of persuasion that finally filtered into the Afghan Mujahideen and the Taliban, etc., etc., etc. But the Brelvis, on the other hand, or what is called as Sufi Brelvis. Now, all Sufis are not moderate. All Sufis are not secular. All Sufis don't just sing cute, nice, sweet ghazals that you can dance to. Many of the Sufis, in fact, are so conservative, they may consider even dancing to be immoral. So there are Sufis and Sufis and Sufis. So Sufi Brelvis are the most conservative of those groups. So Sufi Brelvis set up this group called Dawat-e-Islami. Now, as Dawat-e-Islami came up, by that time, the Taliban and the Deobandis had become very powerful in the Afpak region. By 2001, as we know, 9/11 had happened. The Americans had come in to fight Islamic terrorists, particularly Al-Qaeda, and groups around Al-Qaeda and Taliban, as we know, were the hosts of Al-Qaeda, hosts and brothers of Al-Qaeda. That's when General Musharraf and the CIA both thought it was important to build a group that will counter the Deobandis. And that's when Dawat-e-Islami began to get patronage now of General Musharraf, that's the Pakistani establishment. And also, if you read a lot of the literature on that time, and there is really a truckload of literature, then it looks like they were then patronized by the establishment in Pakistan, Musharraf establishment and the CIA, as a counterweight to the Deobandis, who were the Taliban, and in a way who were closer to Al-Qaeda, etc., etc., or who were closer to the Saudi view of Islam. So this counterpoint in the course of time became a threat of its own kind. Now, this organization, Dawat-e-Islami, or at least one stream of it, they morphed into Tehreek-e-Labbaik. Now, Tehreek-e-Labbaik is something we've spoken about often in Kattak Letter as yet. They are the ones who hold these massive street protests, who've been holding the country to ransom, who've been wanting Pakistan to go and drop all its nuclear weapons over France, after the Sembul Party incident, Sembul Party beheading. They see themselves as the protectors of the Prophet's honor. And Tehreek-e-Labbaik, as we had explained to you earlier, the word Labbaik itself in Arabic means at your service, I am available, at your service, which means I am available in the Prophet's service. In fact, if you look at one of the videos issued by these two Udaipur fellows, they also use the word Labbaik there, where they're basically exhorting them to go around beheading people or chopping the heads of people who they think have caused offense. Now, Tehreek-e-Labbaik became a very powerful political group. It was quasi-political, then it became political. Its vote power is not even a fraction of its street power. But its street power is phenomenal. Its street power, its ability to indoctrinate people. So the police constable in the security detail of the governor of Pakistani Punjab, Salman Taseer, who assassinated his boss, who assassinated his protectee. You know that story. Salman Taseer was speaking in favor of Asia Bibi, who was a Christian woman who had been accused of blasphemy. And as the governor, he was trying to help her. Conservative Islamists did not like it. They wanted the death sentence on her to be carried out for alleged blasphemy. Why alleged? In fact, by that time, she had been convicted of blasphemy and a death sentence was hanging on her head. So Mumtaz Qadri, a constable from his own security detail, shot Salman Taseer. Not very different from how Mrs. Gandhi got assassinated by people in her own security detail. He assassinated Salman Taseer in January 2011. Mumtaz Qadri was caught, he was tried, he was convicted, he was handed a death sentence, which led to big protests. In 2016, he was hanged. And when he was hanged, there was a funeral procession for him and a gathering for him in Rawalpindi's Liaquat Bagh, where lakhs and lakhs and lakhs of people came. In fact, it is said in the Pakistani media, and Pakistanis who are well informed say this, that this was the largest ever funeral collection in Pakistan's history, even larger than the funeral, say, for Ziaul-Haq. That, by the way, I attended and I covered. This one I didn't, but 2016, this massive funeral took place, which Tehreek-e-Labbaik organized, and he was hailed as a big hero because he had settled the scores, supposedly, on behalf of the Prophet. Now, how close was Mumtaz Qadri's connection to Dawat-e-Islami and Tehreek-e-Labbaik? Nothing specific came out, but there is plenty again in the Pakistani media, and I'm sharing with you the story from Dawn at that point. Dawn is Pakistan's most reliable and most independent newspaper. Now, there was no doubt, in fact, anywhere that he was a Tehreek-e-Labbaik man, and he was hailed by TLP, Tehreek-e-Labbaik Pakistan, as a hero. And as we told you, the parentage of Tehreek-e-Labbaik lies in Dawat-e-Islami. Now, what exactly is Dawat-e-Islami? It has a website. You can go to the website. I should not really be pointing people to really sort of subversive literature, but if you read it, it's not subversive as much as it's deeply conservative and religious. So you can check out dawateislami.net. There, they have a view of the world which is conspiratorial, as if everybody is conspiring to undermine Islam, to insult the Prophet, and something has to be done about it. They also talk as if this world is full of jinns and bhoots and devils who are encouraging into people who are encouraging into people's minds blasphemous thoughts. So they say that our mission is to fight these jinns and bhoots and devils, and obviously teach a lesson to those who harbor blasphemous thoughts in their heads. They praise the assassin of Salman Taseer. At the same time, if you read this website, they say that our philosophy is non-violent. I'm saying it with a straight face. You can respond as you wish. There is also a long piece on Tehreek-e-Labbaik and its views on the blasphemy issue, which I'm sharing with you. It's from the website of a think tank called AtlanticCouncil.org, American think tank. And this is a piece by Rohan Ahmed, who's a Pakistani journalist. It's a detailed piece. And that piece, at that point, is also pegged on a similar assassination, similar to what happened in Udaipur just now, similar assassination of the Sri Lankan manager of a garment factory in Sialkot. His name was Priyantha Kumara Diyavadana. In fact, his assassins have just been convicted and handed over death sentences. They also claimed to come from Tehreek-e-Labbaik, and they were defended also strongly by Tehreek-e-Labbaik. So once again, the same blasphemy, the same response to supposed or perceived blasphemy, the killing of the man. So please read this Rohan Ahmed article to get more details on this organization and on the roots of this kind of revenge philosophy over blasphemy, or over what is seen as blasphemy. Now, how do we know, or how do intelligence people know that these people had some connection with this organization? Now, intelligence people say, and this has not been contradicted, and I think it's correct, at 2013 end, last week of 2013, Ghaus Mohammed had gone to Pakistan, and he had spent most of the January of next year, January 2014, in Pakistan. And after that, on social media, on other communication channels, he had been in touch with the people he had met in Pakistan. Right now, there is nothing that tells us he got any instructions from anywhere to do what he was doing. It's possible that these two were still acting as lone wolves, but we know where their thought was rooted. Again, if you want to understand where this philosophy comes from, there's another paper, it's in German. If you Google, you can find English translations also. It is by Thomas Gogler, who's a German scholar and a South Asianist, specifically a Pakistan expert, and has written a lot about Tehreek-e-Labbaik and these issues. So please read his paper. It's titled Mission Medina. Again, if I go to the Dawat website and I see their own agenda, and I'll share that list with you on what they think about themselves, please read that. There is also a section there that is headlined Satan's Whispers and Cures for Them. So these are people who really think that Satan is walking around here and they can take care of Satan's adherents or Satan's followers in the way that apparently these two guys did in Udaipur. Now, having said this, we know that Dawat-e-Islami came into being only recently. Recently as in the last 20 years or 20, 25 years or so. The fact is that in large parts of the Islamic world, this revenge, this punishment of what is seen as blasphemy has become deeply rooted. So if you look at Salman Rushdie, the fatwa against him was issued in 1989 by a powerful sovereign state, that is Iran. That fatwa still stands on the books. So that fatwa, in fact, legitimizes, gives the reason to any Muslim to go and harm Salman Rushdie. And poor fellow Salman Rushdie has had to be in a hiding, has to have a different identity. He's written about it. So it's the fatwa from one country which no other Islamic country has repudiated, because nobody has the courage to do it and nobody wants to take pangas with anything like this. Now, that happened in 1989, and it so happened, I'm doing a little storytelling with you, and I'm not being flippant, and if I smile a couple of times or I make you laugh, the joke is on all the rest of us. The joke is on all the decent people, because I'm talking about a film that came out in Pakistan in the summer of 1990, which was basically a story of quote-unquote heroism of these great Pakistanis, who Pakistani ordinary people who went down to kill what was described constantly in the film as Kutta Salman Rushdie. In fact, they never mentioned his name without the prefix Kutta. Kutta as in dog. Kukur, we might say in the East. Now, this film was called International Gorillay, G-O-R-I-L-L-A-Y. So don't complain about my bad spelling, right? This is not Gorillas, International Gorillay. It is International Gorillay, like that. It also had a star cast, a top star cast of Pakistan, Javed Sheikh, Neeli and Babra Sharif. That was a bit like, in terms of just star quality, a bit like if I want to think of a more recent movie, like the cast of, say, Bajirao Mastani. So you had Deepika Padukone, Priyanka Chopra and Ranveer Singh. So Javed Sheikh, the top male lead at that point, and Babra Sharif and Neeli, the two heartthrobs of all of Pakistani men. They had acted in that film. And what is the film about? I happened to be in Karachi in the summer of 1990, and some friends of mine mentioned this film. So we said one evening, let's go and watch the night show. So we went and watched the night show, and I wrote an article about it in India Today, of which I'm sharing a link with you. Please read that. You will find it interesting. And I think some parts of the film are still available on YouTube, although the full film has been taken off YouTube. That's what I'm told now. Now, this is the film that opens with a lot of bad looking guys. Like, it's a villain ka adda, as we say in a Bollywood film. So in a villain ka adda, all these funny guys with funny glasses and hair, etc., and a few malls walking around there, they are discussing. So they are discussing the threat that the growth of Islam is apparently causing to Zionism across the world. And they have to say that, look, they have to fix the Muslims, and for that they need a really evil guy to fix the Muslims. So in walks is Salman Rushdie look alike? In fact, at that point, I thought this guy looked better than the real Salman Rushdie. So he's got his glasses sitting on the bridge of his very prominent nose, and as you know, with Rushdie. And he's then given the contract to go and fix Islam, because Islam's growth is now bothering the Zionists. And then Rushdie does whatever allegedly Rushdie does. When that happens, there are protests in Pakistan, particularly in Karachi, where the film is set to begin with. Now, Karachi has a deputy superintendent of police who has two Robin Hood brothers. So his brothers do their own stuff. They are tough guys, two Robin Hood brothers. And his brother-in-law is none else than the big actor Javed Sheikh. DIG of Karachi, a man playing DIG, is a traitor. He is sold to Western powers and to Zionists. And when a protest goes out in the city of Karachi, where even the DSP's kids are participating, the DIG opens fire, and in the fire, two of DSP's kids are killed. Javed Sheikh bends down to comfort his niece who's dying, and she says, "Don't worry about me, I will die, but make sure that Kutta Salman Rushdie dies." Again, like any Hindi movie, the sister of the DIG is none else than this great actress, Neeli. See her picture. She was the heartthrob of Pakistan at that point, along with Babra Sharif. Now, Neeli then decides that she has to do something about it. And the family gets together. The DIG must pay for it. So they go to the DIG's house to kill him first. And who has the honor of killing the DIG? None else but the DIG's sister. That is Neeli herself in the uniform of a police inspector, because you know what? She is a police inspector in Karachi. After this, these people then decide to go out and take revenge on Rushdie. And where is Rushdie? Rushdie is on some island. It looked like someplace in the Philippines, given the palm trees, also the looks of the people, of the extras there, possibly somewhere in the Philippines. So the scene now shifts to this Filipino island, where a renegade sheikh from Dubai walks in, and he walks in because he's bringing the arms and equipment and spies and fighters and soldiers to defend Salman Rushdie. Salman Rushdie, or supposed Salman Rushdie, obviously rules this island. This is his adda. This is the Shakal plus Mogambo plus Gabbar Singh plus whatever, all rolled into one. And what he does is, when people come, the faithful come to assassinate him from all over the Islamic world, his spies are able to catch them, and he personally kills them. He kills them, he cuts off their throats with his scimitar, and then lets their blood flow onto a towel, and then holds a towel next to his nose and takes a deep breath. So that is the characterization of Salman Rushdie. At one point, he also calls his head of security, whose name is Captain JC. No surprises, JC for Jesus Christ, right? And he says, "How come you have these eyes whereby you can catch all these Islamic guerrillas who are coming to kill me?" But finally, the real guys, the Pakistani heroes, can't fail. They are caught. Salman Rushdie is personally torturing them, and he wants to torture them to death. When all the three pray to God Almighty, and copies of the Quran appear from all directions in the room and send down 11,000 volt or maybe stronger beams into Salman Rushdie, and you see him fried and vaporized in front of you to mad cheers from the crowds. In that article, I had noticed at that point that all this was happening. I was watching that film in the city where Salman Rushdie's mom lives. The very fact that the film that like this could be made in 89-90, when nobody had heard of pan-Islamic terrorism, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, etc., etc., that showed you a certain fragility or a certain vulnerability to this line of thinking. And that if the top actors could act in this film, the film could do well. This gave you a sense of the popular view. What you're seeing right now, the difference is what you're seeing right now is a manifestation that's not funny.